Chapter 3. What could possibly go wrong? Han Solo scowled and stared out the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon at the swirling blue and white hyperspace tunnel, not really seeing it. He could feel the ship around him, the low vibration of the heavily modified Isu Sim engines growling, hurtling them faster than light speed. He thought about the old man and what he'd been trying to teach the kid on their way from Tatooine to Alderaan. The trip that had started this whole mess, as far as Solo was concerned. The old man had talked of the Force, telling the kid that he needed to stretch out with his senses. Garbage like that. Solo didn't need the Force to feel what the Falcon was doing. It was in his bones. Chewie rumbled at him, trying for the third time to engage him in conversation.
I'm not talking to you, Solo said.
The Wookiee chuffed.
I'm not sulking,
Solo snapped. Even to his own ears, it sounded sullen. The Wookiee laughed.
We'll see how funny you think this is when we're rotting in some Imperial detention cell. This was never the plan, pal.
The engines shifted subtly, almost imperceptibly, but both of them felt it, and both of them straightened up in their seats. Chewbacca already reaching overhead to lock in the acceleration compensators as Solo reached forward to throttle back out of hyperspace. There was no need to talk. They'd done this 1,000 times. You could tell the quality of a crew by how they handled this maneuver. There were pilots who earned very comfortable livings flying rich passengers here and there solely on the basis of how smoothly they could switch from hyperspace back to real space without spilling their passengers' drinks. Only the very best could manage it seamlessly. Solo eased the throttle handles back, cutting power on each engine in concert and watching as the end of the hyperspace tunnel suddenly ran toward them. A field of stars and the glow of the atmosphere of Sirkon coming into focus. At the same time, Chewbacca linked into the sublights, and Solo felt the Falcon catch, caught in space, as if trying to determine which way to go, eager to keep running. He nudged her, reversed the throttle on two of the engines, felt the ship yielding, then brought the remaining throttles back up. All at once, the tunnel was gone, and they were looking at Sirkon, brown, red, and gold beneath them. They'd done it flawlessly. The Emperor himself couldn't have complained. Solo actually grinned, forgetting his bad mood for an instant. Then the Falcon's proximity alarm started shrieking, and the bad mood came back as Solo twisted in his seat to silence it.
What?
He demanded, more of the ship than of his co-pilot.
What?
Chewbacca barked, twisting one of the dials on the sensor array, then slapping the aft-view camera to life. Solo stared at the image on the tiny monitor embedded in the control console and tried to keep his jaw from dropping.
You've got to be kidding me.
Chewbacca snuffed at him, cocking his head.
Yes, Chewie, I think they see us.
There was a crackle from the speakers in the cockpit, the open communications channel springing to life.
This is the Star Destroyer Vehement.
The voice had all the arrogance and entitlement Solo had come to expect from an Imperial officer.
Unknown YT-1300, identify yourself and state your business on Sirkon.
Solo reached for the headset, holding it to one ear as he gestured to Chewie. But he needn't have bothered. His co-pilot was already half out of his seat, reaching under one of the consoles to his starboard for the case full of ship aliases they used for the Falcon. Every ship in the galaxy had, built in as part of its core construction, an identity that was broadcast to other ships that came near enough, called the Identification Friend or Foe, or IFF transponder. It was a unique ID, theoretically impossible to alter, and never mind that it was positively criminal even to try. That hadn't stopped the original owners of the Falcon from doing so, and in the intervening years, Solo and Chewbacca had built on the already considerable library of aliases for the ship, so that now they had quite literally hundreds of false names, and the documentation to go with them.
Well, hello there, Solo said.
He discovered that he had affected a definite twang and decided to run with it.
Lovely day, isn't it, Vehement?
Chewie had the case open on his lap and was pulling data cubes. He held up one to Solo, looking at him quizzically. Plugged in, it would say the Falcon was a ship called Jinden Smoke, running charter for a family named Dweer. Solo shook his head.
Unknown YT-1300, we repeat. Identify and state your business on Sircon, or you will be boarded. You have 10 seconds to comply.
Now, that's no way to greet someone,
Solo said. Chewie held up another two cubes, one that would say they were the Broken Bell carrying hydraulic replacement parts for heavy binary lifters, the other calling them Foul Matter, which was carrying, appropriately enough, sanitation supplies. Solo again shook his head, this time more vigorously, and followed it with a look that said plainly they didn't have time for this. Chewbacca threw up his hands, dropped the cubes, and rummaged around for more.
You talk that way to all the ships that come across your bow?
Unknown YT-1300, you have 5 seconds to comply. Broadcast your transponder identification and state your business on Sircon.
Now rein in your EOPs, Solo said. Got it right here.
There's something going on down there that...
3 seconds! 2 seconds!
Chewbacca held up a final cube, and even before Solo could identify it, slammed it home into its receiver on the console, pounding the transmit button at almost the same instant.
You all should have it now, Vehement, Solo said.
There was a pause, nothing but silence over the open channel. Solo and Chewbacca stared at each other. If the identity was rejected, or worse, identified as false, they'd be facing an Imperial Star Destroyer at point-blank range. At best, they might be able to evade long enough to make the jump back to lightspeed, but the mission would have failed before it had truly begun. Never mind that there was already a Star Destroyer orbiting Sircon. There was a good chance they'd arrive too late anyway.
We identify you as Lost and Found, Captain Causal Dridge. State your business and cargo.
Yep, that's me, Solo said. Just heading down to refuel and get a little R&R is all. Understand there's a cantina out on the south side of Motok. You know, the capital, where they have the cutest little Twi'lek dancers you've ever...
Your perversions are of no interest to us, Captain Dridge. In future, you are advised to transmit your ship identification immediately upon exiting hyperspace. You are free to go about your business. Vehement out.
There was a click as the communications channel closed. Solo and Chewbacca slumped back in their seats, exhaling in unison. The Falcon shuddered as it cut through the atmosphere and settled as Solo and Chewbacca guided her through the toxic skies of Sircon on approach to the capital. Chewie keyed in coordinates while Solo finalized their landing arrangements with Motok Flight Control, securing a landing bay in one of the largest facilities on the edge of the city. There was good and bad about hiding out on Sircon, Solo reasoned. The good was that the local government was as corrupt as the Imperial one, and with enough credits, one could bribe or buy one's way to just about anything one needed. While there was ostensibly a working economy on the planet, the real business was made on the black market, dealing in goods and weapons and spice, and sometimes even slaves. If you could make money on it, it was probably being bought or sold in one of Sircon's cities. The bad was that Sircon didn't have much in the way of said cities. There was Motok, by far the largest and thus the de facto capital, and perhaps a half dozen others scattered across the planet, but that was it. There was a good reason for this. Sircon cities were all domed, enclosed structures with regulated temperature and atmosphere controls. When the planet had been colonized long before the fall of the Republic, it had been an ideal, almost idyllic world, situated perfectly in the habitable zone from its single star. Since then, the atmosphere had turned poisonous as industrial and commercial ventures had filled it with toxins. The temperature had skyrocketed. The surface had begun to overheat. And the result was a runaway greenhouse effect that now meant you either lived under a dome or you died. End of story. Which meant the cities were overcrowded, overpopulated, and underserved. Lots of places to hide, sure, but not a lot of places to run. The Falcon glided toward the cluster of port structures as directed by flight control, and Solo brought the ship in a slow pass over their designated bay. Each bay was protected by a magnetic shield, a faint blue tinge shimmering of energy, and several were occupied. Chewie leaned forward, peering past him, joining him in a survey of the visible ships parked below. In one of the bays, they could see an Imperial troop transport. Sentinel class. The Wookiee rumbled unhappily.
Maybe they didn't land a full compliment, Solo said.
Chewbacca didn't bother to dignify that with a reply. Instead, he pointed one hairy finger, indicating another ship parked in a bay perhaps half a click from the Imperial transport. This one wasn't military, not at all, but rather a 1550 Lex, a luxury yacht with a bright blue stripe painted along the top of its hull, running from bow to stern. Chewie snuffed a question at him.
Looks like her, yeah.
Chewie snuffed a second time. Lower.
We'll see.
Solo flicked the throttles, brought the Falcon through a 180 that reversed their direction, put them into a hover over their designated landing bay, then set the ship down onto its pad as gently as if he were kissing a child on the nose. Chewie began securing systems, and Solo set the engines to standby as opposed to full shutdown. The Wookiee looked at him.
Like you don't think we'll be leaving in a hurry?
Solo said. The Wookiee considered, then huffed in agreement. He rose, grabbed his bowcaster from where it rested in the empty navigator's chair behind where he'd been sitting, and looked at Solo again.
Well, let's hope you won't need it.
They stepped from the cockpit and down the short hall to the circular main compartment. Chewie rumbled, growled, then barked as Solo lowered the ramp, and they stepped from the ship and out into the bay.
I don't know, Solo said. You can pack a lot of stormtroopers into one of those Sentinel shuttles.
That got another chuff in response.
Look, it's a big city, pal. We don't know if Vehement's after him. It could just be a coincidence, right? And even if they are searching for EMAT, they're going to be spread out. So we keep our eyes open, we play it smart. We'll be fine. In and out. Nobody'll even know we were here.
They started across the landing bay toward the main doors that led to the port. The Wookiee rumbled again.
I'm trying to maintain a spirit of optimism here, Chewie, Solo said.
He was getting annoyed.
If you're nervous about this, I'm going to take this moment to remind you that this was your idea. I wanted nothing to do with it, remember?
The Wookiee woofed as Solo reached for the doors and keyed them open. They slid apart, revealing a long, wide, bustling promenade that stretched as far as the eye could see, with more corridors leading to the other bays extending from either side. The noise was immediate. Voices arguing, shouting in a dozen languages, speeders whizzing past, droids yammering in binary, vendors hawking their wares from their stalls. They stepped through, and Solo hit the door controls, locking the Falcon safely behind them.
Look, relax, Solo said, turning to face Chewbacca. We've dealt with stormtroopers before. It could be worse.
The Wookiee rumbled softly. Solo spun, watching as the crowd parted to reveal an oddly tall and lean figure some 15 meters away, leading a group of three humanoids. It took another half second before Solo could recognize the leader as a droid, unlike any he'd ever seen. Its face was a mockery of protocol droids, flat, matte gray with an extended collar flaring out around it, like some steel flower. Its chassis was humanoid, but seemed only partially completed, ending mid-torso and revealing the whirling machinery sunk into its waist. Its legs were long, an imitation of human skeletal structure, like its arms. It carried a heavy blaster pistol in one metal fist, and a longer, crueler-looking blaster carbine in the other. The three behind the droid, a Kubaz, his long snout visible even from that distance, a Gron, and a human, were likewise moving their weapons into position.
Han Solo,
the droid said, and even across the distance its voice was clear, clipped, metallic like the rest of its form.
Jabba says hello.
Then the droid opened fire.